Hello, everybody. My name is Ms. Parker, and I'm with RV Project Help. I do these videos to give people a good base knowledge of what to expect when they have high wealth and how they can make their lives better. My goal is to make sure that every humanitarian gets all the information they need so they can get the most amount of money possible. And then when you get those funds to be able to do your humanitarian projects, that you have the information on how to make your life very comfortable and background information on how to do details that you've never done before. My background is corporate writing. I write corporate documents. I started in the cannabis industry because everybody hated the cannabis industry, and I found a niche market there. And then other industries reached out to me, and so now I work in all kinds of industries. I write business documents. I write full business plans for companies. I have the ability to make companies completely vertical, and I write pitch documents. I believe that my Heavenly Father is pressed upon my heart to do this work for free, because if you guys don't know these kind of things, you're going to leave a lot of money on the table and you're going to be really stressed when this happens because you don't know how to do anything. So I'm trying to alleviate a lot of that stress by doing these chats. So I'm going to start with a disclaimer of liability. The material and information contained on this website is for general information purposes only. You should not rely upon the material or information on the website as a basis for making any business, legal, or other decisions. While we endeavor to keep the information up to date and as correct as possible, RV Project Help makes no representations or warranties of any kind, express or implied, about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability with respect to the website or to the information, audio files, products, services, or related graphics contained in the website or spoke about in the audio files for any purpose. Any reliance you place on such materials is therefore strictly at your own risk. So, folks, I have a very bad potty mouth, and God is working in my life. I'm new to Christ, so I'm trying to do these audios with no swearing whatsoever, and that's a challenge. So thanks, Donnie. I appreciate the challenge. Let's see how it goes on this one. So folks, when you have hired quite a few people, you learn some tricks. And some people never learn these tricks. But I hire differently because everything that happens in the hiring, well, not everything, but a lot of what happens in the hiring station, the hiring part of what you're doing, is information that will help you with that employee for a very long time. And it can help you with information on how to motivate that employee. So with that said, I tell my new CEOs, or my new owners, company owners, when you do an interview, always, always, always have and take document the conversations, because the information that you get in this interview is priceless. Most people, most new companies, business owners that don't know this, they do the interview and they never take any notes. This is an opportunity for you to be able to leverage your knowledge of what this employee says at the very first meeting to inspire them to work to the best of their degree, because they're going to want to when you go back. And anyway, this will make sense when we go on. So a lot of the standard questions, I'm going to talk about a lot of the standard questions that you get when you usually a CEO or interviewee asks a potential hire. But many people don't know what to do with that information later, and they don't know that that information about the employee is actually really important. So when you hire people, a lot of times you'll get their resume, you'll look at the resume, and you'll think, oh man, this person is really awesome. I really want to hire this person because, man, he's got this skill, that skill. He went to this school, that school. He's ran this big a company, and yeah, he looks fantastic. Okay. Unfortunately, they'll do the interview and that little gut feeling comes up and goes, man, this guy, his resume is wonderful. It's just fantastic. But he's a total jerk in public. And so they think, well, shoot, I'm new with this, and his resume really, really, really looks good. And I really, really need that kind of person with that kind of skills. So maybe that's just the way CEOs are. So I'll just hire this guy because I think he's going to be a good fit. I'm going to tell you right now, that's the absolute worst thing you can do. Compatibility, the ability to get along, the feeling like this guy and you are on track, you're thinking with the same brain, that is worth way more to your organization than somebody that has a fancy pants resume. Because a fancy pants resume may be completely made up. You just don't know it. So you always, always hire people who you vibe with, who you think is going to be a good fit. I don't do one interview. I do three interviews. And I do three interviews for, let's get into that in just a minute. But the last interview is not with me. It's with my wealth management team. If you haven't heard how to use a wealth management team to your benefit so you can really fly with your new humanitarian program, please take a moment and go listen to that and then come back and listen to this recording. So my first step, how do I get a potential hire sitting in front of me? I reach out to my wealth management team because I do not have the skill set or the knowledge of what I need as a CEO to run this new humanitarian company. But my wealth management team, if they're good, they have helped other companies start. They're going to have access to headhunters. And when you say, okay, I need to hire a CEO, I need to hire two CEOs. I need to hire a CEO that will run this company. And I believe I want to be hands-on and run this company as well. I need a CEO to work with me, liaison with me, to teach me how to run this company and be second in charge for the CEO that's currently run the company. Because once we get up to a certain point, we're going to start a second location. So by having a second CEO, that ensures that if you get working with this company and you think after a couple months, oh my God, I can't stand this. I can't stand the stress of this. I'd rather work as a chairman of the board. So I don't want to be hands-on. I only want to work one day a week. So if you come to that realization, then that second CEO, you just say, listen, you're in training to take we're going to open a second location. By having two CEOs working in the same thing, one will rise to the top. The cream always rises to the top. The best guy is going to rise to the top. It may be that you've hired a second CEO to, you know, kind of oversee, and the guy that you had thought was your primary falls down on the job. By having a second CEO there that is supposed to be training you and teaching you, if the first guy falls on his face, you put the second one in charge. Your wealth management team is going to guide you through this whole process because they've done all this before. They're there to be your pillars behind you to make sure that you do well, okay? So you're going to be in contact with your wealth management team all the time. Like, I've got this new guy. How do I do this and that? He's telling me, giving me reports, and I don't know what to do with the information he gives me. So in the morning, you meet with your CEO, and if you have multiple locations, each different manager of that location, they only get a certain slot of time. And then the wealth management company from the interview from the last time you guys met, they'll already have walking points for you, which means if your CEO gets to this point, then give him this piece of information. If your CEO doesn't get to this point, find out why he didn't meet his goals, target goals, and then we'll discuss it after, after you meet with your CEO. Once you get comfortable with that, it's like riding a horse. You jump on and take off every day, whatever your meet day is. It's very easy. So you reach out to your wealth management company and you ask them to send you candidates for that position that you want filled. Now, it may be a regional position, it might be a global position, it might be the first hire for your entire humanitarian position, and that person is tasked to help you launch your entire project. There are some CEOs that all they want to do is start the show. All they want to do is start up. That was me. I was a startup specialist. I'd walk into companies, I'd get everything completely going, and then I'd turn it over to the new owner. So there's people that specialize in that. And so your wealth management team is going to have a meeting with you, several meetings probably, and figure out how you want to run your humanitarian project. And you may say, I don't know anything. I don't know how to run it. What would you advise? And they can either advise you or they can take what your ideas are and go, I'm going to pick on Lazarus. Lazarus, this is a great idea, but you're coming at this a wrong way or a way that might cause to be a lot difficult. Let me suggest a different way for you to do this. And at that point, you can say yes or no. But they're going to be aggressive with you. They're going to be always on your side, and they're going to be always putting people in front of you that would be, they believe, a good match. Okay. So you get through the first interview, and you have like three people that you're interviewing, and then you pick one. You say, oh, this one's a good one. So then you go back to the secretary after the first interview and say, I'd like to have a second interview. And I want to pick this person. At the first end of the first interview, you say, thank you, we'll get in touch, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So you're done with the three or four or however many your wealth manager says. And then you ask, I'd like you to make an appointment for this guy to come back and have a casual interview. Now, what's a casual interview? A casual interview is an interview where you guys are going to do something. Like, if I knew how to play golf, traditional golf, I would say, my second interview is held over a round of golf. Would you be interested? And they'll say yes or no. Or they'll come back with, you know what? Do you play squash? Do you play tennis? If they don't play golf, they'll come up with something else. I had one guy that said, look, I really only know how to play golf. And I said, you know what? I don't know how to play golf, but I do know how to play putt-putt golf. And he starts laughing. He goes, you know how to play miniature golf? I go, yeah, I suck on the golf course. And he goes, okay, let's play miniature golf. So we had an entire high conference over miniature golf. It was great. So you want an activity to do on that second interview because he's going to drop the mask. You're going to get to see who that guy really is. And you're not actually worried about what you and him talk about. That's not what you're doing. What you're doing is you're watching how this guy or this gal, excuse me, interacts with everybody around him. How does he interact with the gal that brings the golf balls? How does he interact with standing, to pay for the tickets to pay? Then after you play putt-putt golf, you go out for a dessert or coffee or something like that. How does he interact with the staff that comes to the table and takes the order? All of these things are important because the way he interacts with those people is the exact way he's going to interact with the people that he hires. So If I've gone through an interview, loved this gal, thought this gal was amazing, gonna be great. And what did we do? We played table tennis. She was into table tennis. So not table tennis, ping pong is what they call it. So we went to the local health what's that called? Gym, and they had a table tennis there. That's where she went to do her workouts. And the way she treated the staff was awful. We went out to get coffee and a piece of pie, and the bitch sent the, oh gosh darn it, I'm trying not to swear. Sorry about that. The lady, I use that word loosely. She sent her pie back. Seriously? You sent pie back? What are you going to do? You can't recook pie. And it was the same piece of pie I had, and there was nothing wrong with the pie. She was just complaining about everything that anybody did for her. And so I'm like, no, that's not the right one. And I didn't hire her. I made an appointment with the second guy that I liked. It was a male, and we went. It was one of those that I went and paid. I don't know why. I end up playing putt-putt golf with a lot of people. Yeah, I guess because a lot of these businessmen, they're used to going playing golf, so it's like, okay, this is funny, but let's do this. He didn't interview very well. His resume looked good, but he was. I'm really type A aggressive. I'm serious aggressive. So it's like if you can't come to my level, I'm gonna run over you like a freight train. So I want aggressive, powerful, to the point of almost abrasive people that work with me because I want you to kick the slats down. We got stuff to go. And that's how I want my CEOs to be because a lot of my work is national, and you don't have time to do, you don't have time to pussyfoot around. So you got to have somebody really aggressive. And so in the interview, the formal interview, he did not strike me as very aggressive. And when we play putt-putt, it was hilarious. He was absolutely just as aggressive as I was every single round, every single, hole. We're giving each other grief by the third hole. It was a blast. It was the most fun ever. I ended up hiring this guy, and I liked him so well that I pulled him into a second company 10 years later. He was amazing, amazing, amazing. So that outside interview where you're outside actually doing stuff, it's going to really show you who that guy is. And when you're talking, when if I've got you thinking now to do national or global, you need somebody that you like because you're going to be spending a tremendous amount of time with that person. Every week you're going to be spending time with that person, or if not, working hand in hand. So you really need to like whoever you're going to put in that top position. So I made the pitch. I like the guy. I called my wealth management team up and I said, I want to hire this guy as a CEO. I want you to handle it. I do not do the final hiring. I never do the final hiring. Why? Because I suck at it and I know it. I don't negotiate rates well. I have lost my temper when people give me, I'm like, I got a gnat's interest in somebody if they quote me a rate that is like double the price of industry. So I'll just fire him. No, not, and I'll just walk out. So all that work I've done before, it's like, nope, not doing it. So I always have my wealth management team hire my CEO. I give them a parameter of money. This is between this and this is what they should do. And these are the perks I'm willing to offer. Now, when I tell them the perks I'm willing to offer, I don't tell them to offer those to the person. They have to know to ask. If they don't ask, they're not going to get it. If they don't know, they're not going to get it. You have to remember that people at that level, they expect to have perks on top of their hire. So, how much do you want them? Do you want them enough to make some dang nice perks? Or do you, yes, no, whatever. So, what kind of perks? Car, laundry service, tickets, vacation, paid vacation on, you know, you have your, you may have a super yacht. You might own a super yacht. You might own a, you know, second home that had that you have staff on premise. So vacation in the mountains, whatever your perks are. The wealth management team, they're going to say, what kind of perks do you would like to offer this person to hire? Do you want to give a portion of your business away? No, you don't, because it's a humanitarian project. It's not a business. So they're going to ask you what you want, and then you turn the tables on them. And you go, what should I offer them? What kind of perks should I offer them? And you have, if he asks for a perk that's not usual, you have approval from me to give a perk that's up to $20,000. You give him limits, and then you let him do the negotiation with the new hire. They're really good at this, and you're not. There's questions that you can say or things you can say in the hiring process that will tell that new hire that you don't know what you're doing. If you don't know what is normal, what's to be expected for that caliber of person, that will show up in your hiring process because you don't say the right words. You don't put things in the right way because you don't know. So I tell my new company owners, have your wealth management team hire the person. Tell the wealth management team that you want a hidden recording of that hiring process and you want access to that recording. And what you want is you want to watch that recording because that recording is going to teach you how to hire people. And you listen to the recording and then you delete it. The whole reason why you want these first, your CEO, your CFO, COO, all your three-letter suite, you want all of those recorded. And look, I want them recorded because I don't know how to hire at that level. And I'm not willing to waste a hiring on my ignorance of how to do that. So I need you to record it. And I want to be able to look at the recording and go over the recording with you. And then I want to delete the recording. It's just strictly for my education. I've had zero problems with any of my new clients, the new CEOs that are starting these companies. When they've asked their wealth management team under those circumstances, it's strictly to educate me. There's never been any kickback. The wealth management team says, sure, we understand why you want to do that. And they record the entire conversation and then they delete the entire conversation. So that gives you a lot of information, more than them just saying, well, we asked this question, this question, this question, and this is how he answered. Because the way they answer tells you a lot of things. How they sit in their chair when they answer you, their facial expressions, these are all clues and gives you feedback about what you're asking, more than just your wealth management team giving you a report afterwards. Time for a sip of coffee. Hold on. So, one of the first questions I ask is, I actually love this question. I say something along the line of, hey, your CV is amazing, but I'd like to know a little bit more about you. Can you tell me, in your own words, your story of your career? And people love that question because it's not a scary question to answer. And they kind of expect it anyway, you know? The person that you want to hire, you know, if you're, especially if you're doing somebody for technical skills. When you're going to hire somebody for technical skills, that part of their resume has already been vetted by your wealth management team because your wealth management team is going to put this person in front of you. So if you're hiring somebody for technical, always hire on personality. Don't even bother yourself about the skills because you don't know anything. You don't want to ask a question that you don't know how they should answer because it's a waste of your time, it's a waste of his time. So if you're hiring somebody technical, Ask questions or look for questions that's based on personality rather than a spreadsheet, okay? You want somebody that has a mix, equally kind of balance of motivation, how they want to do things, personality, how they get along, if they're nice, if they're aggressive, whatever, and just a combination of different skills. So when you start the interview off with, some version of, hey, your CV is great, but what's your business story? It allows them to open up, and you may learn stuff about them that you would never have guessed. Take notes. A lot of people, my first time I've get, excuse me, I got a hiccup that's not hiccuping. When I train my clients, when I teach my clients how to run their businesses, one of the biggest complaints is, no, I don't want to ask that question. They're going to talk forever. No, they don't. They actually don't talk that long at all when you ask them to tell you their story, because they're going to give you the highlights of their background. So that's a really good question to ask. Another question, I want to know somebody's character, okay? And so many of the questions that I ask are based around character, because I need to like this person. And if I don't like this person, they're not going to last very long in my company. And right now, you may be a very kind, gentle person. You may have the patience of Job, but when you start running a company like this, and you're learning about what you personally can do or not do, you will find very quickly that if a person's character is poor, that is not a good fit for you, and you need to get them out. So, one of the questions I ask is, what's one hard moment you've had to overcome, and how did you do it? And that question, it tells you the grit of the person. It tells you what they can actually do and get over. I've heard all kinds of incredible stories of from interviewees, and sometimes the question that causes me to pick that person is the answer that they gave me to what's one hard moment you've had to overcome and how did you do it? That is a very powerful question, and it tells you the character of the person. Okay. You want to know what they consider to be important. You want to know what they consider is an achievement. Okay. And sometimes, the answer to this question tells you what motivates that person. You get to kind of get a peek of their identity and where they are in the line and the process of fixing things, and where they stood in the line of what did they do when things didn't go according to plan? And the question I ask is, what's one achievement you're really proud of? Now, if that person answers you in an answer that is not a core value of excellence, it's not something that you value highly, that's not a person you want to hire. If they say, my one achievement that I'm proud of is I raised my daughter, and that's all they say, that's doesn't tell you anything. It tells you that they don't want to answer that question, and they don't consider that question valuable. That question is very valuable. If they say, I raised my daughter and she's in a wheelchair, and we couldn't get her into this college, and we petitioned the college to help them get ramps for her to go into classes, and the college was so impressed with her and our and what we did is they helped us with ramps for every every egress and exit of her classes. And it just made an amazing help to the community. That's a great answer. That tells you what they think is a major achievement. The major achievement is helping somebody overcome something, which is a humanitarian. Sometimes the questions, the answers that they give you to that question tells you that they have a humanitarian mindset because they're helping somebody do something. And that humanitarian mindset, that can't be bought. That's something that is either in them or not. So depending on what that achievement question is, that's their answer is, that can give you a tremendous amount of feedback. So I'm going to have to take a 1 minute break here. I love coffee, and coffee is like beer. You only get to borrow it for a few minutes. So I need to take a 2 minute potty break. I will be right back. I'm going to play a little piece of music, and at least I think I'm going to play a little piece of music. Actually, I found no music that's on here. Here you go. I'll be right back. Thank you, folks. Sorry about that. So the next question that you want to ask is one that you want to take notes on, because this question is going to help you decide what you're going to do with this person when they make successful and they make successful choices, or they do a major achievement. You want to reward that person, okay? So this next question tells you how to really tap into that. Hold on a minute. Tap into that motivation part of that person. So how do you keep somebody long-term? Okay. You pick somebody that is going to allow that what happened to them is the same type of thing that your company does. Okay. Or you want to have common ground. The answer to what motivates you is common ground, common understanding. Okay. This is a question that you are not going to accept a very light answer. Okay. You want to actually get as much information on this question, probably as much or more than any other question that you're going to ask. And I don't ask this question first. I ask several questions that puts them in a comfortable mindset, and the conversation should be by this question should be very comfortable. Because this is a question that is going to tell you whether or not you want to hire the guy. A serious question. What motivates you? Sounds like a really simple question, but it's not. There are five common motivators in business. Five common motivators that motivate people to do what they do or to work for a company long term. First one is money and rewards. If they say, oh, you know, the money doesn't mean anything to me, you know, it's no big deal. They're either rich or they're lying. So if somebody blows off the questions about money, that's not something you want to hire. Now, if they answer, you work on the ocean, on the reef. And if they say, this is my dream to work on the ocean, to do an ocean project. The money is going to be good, but the more important thing for me is that this is something I actually personally want to do. So if they have an answer like that, what that answer is passion. Okay. If you ever hear, if you've got an interviewee that they say anything along that line, put your ears up, listen harder, because that's now that guy is going in the, or that gal is going in the exact same alignment you want to do. You want to hire people who have passion. You want to hire people that say things like, I'm really interested in this project because I'm interested in this. And it's always when they say I'm interested in this, it's a key alignment. So I'm really interested in working with the Hemp Reef Project because I'm a scuba diver already and I really love the ocean. And to know that there's a company out there that is going to be working on the reefs, that would be a wonderful job for me. That's passion, folks. That's passion. That question is answered. Then put a tick in the box. That's a good person. Okay. That's a person you want to continue the conversation with because that's a great answer. If they say money and rewards, and it's simple, that's A plus B equals C. If they say money and rewards, no problem. Now you know that when they do a job well done, you don't offer them a vacation trip to Europe. You don't offer them, let me buy you a new desk. You don't offer them none of that stuff. You say, hey, here's a half a, you know, $3,000 or $4,000. Thank you very much. They've already told you what they want. Let me get into that a little bit later. I'm going to say that now. So some people, they say, what motivates me is rewards or power, external rewards, power, or I want to be able to show that I'm doing what I'm doing. It's quite answers about power, fame, or clout. Okay. So when you have somebody that says, what motivates me is being able to do what I'm doing. I just want to know that I matter. I just want to know that I matter. I want to know that the company values me. I have a program that I do with value because I saw in the military, different military people I know, they have all kinds of rewards. You know, when they get all dressed up in their really fancy clothes, they have pins and bars and all kinds of stickers. And some of these guys, that thing is from their top of their shoulder all the way down to halfway down their chest, all their rewards. And these guys, you know, they have that rolled back military stance, but you can tell they're proud of their accomplishments. How do you give pride of accomplishments with an external symbol? Mary Kay Cosmetics, she used a bumblebee. She got different kinds of, you did different projects, you got more bumblebees. There's been a lot of different things that companies have done. I use a company called Pandora, and I set up, they have charms, little charms, and they're not cheap. They're expensive. And so I would say, okay, if we did this project, if you worked on it and did well, you got this for your bracelet. If you, we're our first day of setting the pier for our hemp blocks. We got our first pier ready. We're ready to go out to the ocean. So pier water, I might give a charm that looks like a little seal or has something to do with the ocean. And what you're doing is you're building a visual expression of power. They matter. They were involved in this club. They were involved in this thing. They were involved in that thing. There was one, I can't remember it now. I know it, but I can't remember it to tell you because I can't remember that part. But there was one job that we did that was in one of my companies that was really awful. Awful, awful, awful. We dealt with a client who really, I just wanted to take a frying pan to his head every single day. He was awful, just awful. And so the little charm that I gave to the people that worked on that crew, everybody, when we met for, company dinners or stuff, they would remark on that charm because it was a symbol of I worked with one of the worst clients ever. And so those bracelets became company standard, and because it's Pandora, the charms were you could give them to male or females. But a lot of times what would happen is the husbands, the men that work for me, would give that bracelet to their wife. And so you come into a company dinner and the wife would be wearing the bracelet. I had a couple of employees that loved those bracelets. They would volunteer for every difficult project because they wanted charms on their bracelet. So, on people that say, money is it motivates me, I would offer like certain jobs there would be charms, certain other jobs that I know he didn't give a he didn't care about the bracelets. So I said, I made the offer to them. Look, if you don't want a company bracelet, we will give you the same value of the charm. We'll deposit it in your bank account. So I've had guys that, no, I don't want that charm bracelet. I don't need that kind of recognition. I like money. So because I wrote this down in the interview, I didn't have a problem when it came to motivation. Because some people were just absolutely not motivated by those charm bracelets at all. They wanted the money. And so you give them the option, which way do you want? When you roll that incentive out to the company, you ask on the paperwork, would you like to be involved in the appreciation, company appreciation bracelets, or would you rather have funds instead? You write those questions out because now you're actually truly motivating those people. This is the information that you get in an interview as a boss that you use for later. And unfortunately, until you're a Fortune 500 boss, you don't know that these questions that you are asking is going to help you as much as it's going to get this guy a job. My mentor is the one that taught me a lot about this kind of stuff. So sometimes you will get what motivates me to stay at a company is if the company provides education. In my area, I'm a tech guy, and I need classes. I need to constantly upgrade my certificates and this and that. So people that say their motivation is in classes. The first thing you ask them after that is, okay, do you want to be involved with the company appreciation projects? Or is only classes and education improving your skill set important to you? These answers are really, really important for you to document. Because when it comes time to for bonuses, when it comes time for raises, when it comes time for appreciation bracelets, whatever those times are where you reward your staff, you want to know what's the reward that gets their juices going? What's the reward that's going to make them want to stay with you? I mean, I've had people say, look, my, you know what, motivates me is having a company car. Well, that's not a motivation that aligns with your company journey. So if they said, you know, what motivates me is a company car, I just didn't even listen anymore. Because the people that get company cars are the ones that need it to do their job. So if they just want, oh, I just need a car, that's not the right person for you. So these answers, these five different common motivators, that's what you're looking for them to say. That's telling you, okay, this guy's on point and you want to go with this guy. So in humanitarians, if they say, look, having an impact on helping the world, that's what motivates me. You're a humanitarian project, for God's sakes. You don't even, that, boom, that's a check mark. That's a great answer. So money and rewards, they want to do better, make themselves better, get better skill sets. Having an impact, either being knowing that they matter or having an impact in helping others. Power, clout, fame, and then the last one is passion. Those are the things that you want them to answer. If they answer with other answers than that, they may not be a person that you can motivate later. These are simple motivations. It's easy to come up with solutions for them. So that's one of the interview questions that you want to document. And once you do this interview, you need to put all of your files. You start a company, your executive secretary, that's the person that's helping you run the business, you know, your right hand of the business. When you're done with this interview, you say, look, here's this information on the interviewee. Here's the notes I took. Can you write this in why am I stumbling for words right now? I have a pre-done paper that says money rewards. It gives a different list so you can check off the questions while you're asking them. And then it has a spot for you to write notes in. So you fill out that paper while you're interviewing them and you give it to your executive assistant and they file it under employee records. When you go back to do rewards for the company, motivate the company, you pull this out and you handle each person based on their rewards. And doing that kind of care to that degree, if you don't think the employees don't recognize it, you're wrong. You're totally wrong. I've had companies where people come up to me and said, look, normally you only get like, you get vacation time or you get one or the other and the whole people, everybody has to do with it. I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to give me cash instead of the bracelet charms. That's thank you so much for giving us a chance to have different types of motivational rewards. They recognize it, folks, and it makes you look like a super boss. You are a super boss. You are a superpower. So, I believe that every person in the three-letter suite and a lot of the upper management, they've got a trick. They've got something that they do that is the reason why they maintain their jobs. So you want to know what that trick is, okay? So don't waste time. Ask them straight up front. Be a straight shooter. What is your superpower? What's your kryptonite? What is the best thing you do? And what's the thing that shoots you in the foot? And everybody that's in a three-letter suite or upper management, they have something that they do really, really good. And if you just ask them straight out, they'll tell you. It's a lot easier than hiring them and then trying to figure out, I wonder what this guy did for somebody else that kept him working for there. Just ask them straight out. They'll tell you. What's your superpower? What do you do better than anybody else in your field? And they'll tell you. Don't waste time. This interview is not for you to waste time later. This interview is for you to get all the stuff you need to have as a person who's going to run a humanitarian project right up front. So be bold. Ask these kind of questions. Find out what they believe they're the best at and find out what they believe they need to improve the most. Somebody who is going to be a good match for you is somebody that's going to be honest about where they screw up. So, like, I'm really bad at structured tasks. I cannot do math. I'm dyslexic, for God's sakes. sixes and nines look the same to me. Twos and fives look the same to me. Threes and eights look the same to me. I can't tell the difference between a plus sign and a multiplication sign, which I can tell you right now, I have had chief financial officers nearly pull their hair out when I say, hey, look, here's my numbers for this. It's like, Parker, you can't freaking add. You can't tell the difference between a plus sign and multiplication sign. These numbers are completely wrong. And then we all laugh. It's like, why do you do this? You can't do this anyway. So never, never, never give your Superman something to do that is going to be their kryptonite, because you're just going to waste everybody's time. And if you are the one that's doing your kryptonite thing, you're wasting everybody's time. That's not good. I have my mentor, Tom, every company that he works with, he always takes his chief financial officer. And that's something that if you have a CEO that you're interviewing and they say, hey, I bring my CFO, chief financial officer with me, say yes, because those guys have worked in tandem together, and you want a CFO and a CEO to work like frickin' frack. You want them to work really close together. So a lot of times they won't work without the other one, because it's like, you get one person in two minds doing the same thing. Oh, dang it. I was going to tell a story and I forgot because I got sidetracked. Oh, I remember. I used to do business projections, knowing that I screw up all the numbers, just to torment Tom's CFO. Look, can you do this like this? And he looks at it and it's like, he rolls his eyes. Really, Parker? Really? Really? You're dyslexic. You can't. These numbers are all screwed up. Everybody would have a laugh. I just did it for fun. It was good times. Super good times. So you can kind of tell, like, after you've done a few interviews like this, and especially if you ask your wealth management team, hey, can you record these things that you're doing so I have a better idea how to respond as someone that's learning how to interview? But pretty soon you can tell what kind of person that person is. After like the 10th or 20th interview you've done, you really start to get in the groove and you get it, okay? So I figure out if I like the candidate or I don't like the candidate by about the fifth or sixth question. And say your company has a problem getting on-time delivery of materials to do your work, okay? So I ask, you know, how do you deal with friction in getting materials to arrive on time? Well, what that does is that gives the interviewee an opportunity to tell you what their core is. Some answers are going to be ideas. Unusual ideas, unusual responses. And that's always really interesting. Some are going to be creative and come up with some kind of interesting way to do things. So one comes up with an idea how to do things. Another kind comes up with a different way to do things. And the last kind of person is an executor. They say, someone in my team did this, and I would do this. I got it done. I'm the person that gets it done. There's one kind of person is a person that's an idea man. I come up with an idea on how to fix it. I come up with an unusual solution for this that may work around the problem. Or I'm the one that takes the problem and fixes it. I execute it. I make it happen. So those are three different types of ways of answers that you're going to get. Those are the most common types of of people and the way people deal with stuff. And if whatever they answer, you have to realize that their kryptonite is the exact opposite of what that answer is. It's usually at the other end of the spectrum. So do not have a predetermined impression of them by their answer, and don't shut them down, because if you allow them to finish that answer fully, if you don't like the beginning of the answer, you're going to be surprised, because a lot of times their full, complete answer will win you over and make you see or understand why they may have answered it in a way that you thought was, that's kind of foolish, that won't work. And then the more they speak about their give you the answer, what they're going to do, it a lot of times will win you over. I've had guys answer this, start out with this question, and they're answering it, and the first couple sentences, I'm like, oh, heck, this is not right at all. And then they complete their answer, and I realize, oh, no, this is really good. So that's one of those questions that you got to let them completely answer the question, because you're going to be surprised, because sometimes the answer is way different than you expected in the beginning. Time for a sip of coffee. One of the difficult questions is, some people have a difficulty with this, others just jump right in. One of those difficult questions is, what's the biggest mistake you've made? For some people, they will brush this question over, don't hire that person. For some people, they're going to give a very flip answer, don't hire that person. What you're looking for is, do they understand that question? Can they look at something they've done in the past and explain how they screwed up? Remember, for those of you that have been listening to a couple of my audios, I always say, you're going to crash a company. You're going to wreck a company. That's just a given. That's every CEO, every owner, every major wealthy person that's had any kind of company in their control. I guarantee you, in their history, they have smashed a company. They have crashed a company. They have destroyed a company. And that crash, that destruction, that is often the impetus that causes you to build the next company better, way better. If you crash a company and you walk around kicking yourself in the butt for crashing the company, you're not learning anything. When you crash a company, tear it apart. Sit down with your wealth manager, sit down with your CEO and say, all right, boys, what did we do wrong? What can we do to fix this? Where was the starting point of the straw that broke the camel's back? It's a really important opportunity, and many people miss it, especially new owners, new CEOs. They don't realize there is sheer gold in crashing a company. That's the school of hard knocks, baby. That's the one that's really going to teach you how to get up and run. If you tranche money and we're got 100 years of money coming in, that means you have 100 years of totally screwing up everything and still being okay to get it. So it's okay if you crash a company. It's okay if the person tells you, I wrecked a $30 million company and blah, blah, blah. That you want to have them to be able to break down their past performances. And people that are wanting to self-improve, that answer will be easy. It'll roll out of their tongue because they know their biggest mistake. And if they're honest with themselves about their mistakes, that's somebody you want to hire. That's somebody you want to hire. It doesn't matter. Oh, I crashed a $3 million company. I this 2019, I crashed a $20 million company. I crashed it. I absolutely crashed it. I got hired by three guys who knew nothing about the industry they were doing, they were going to grow. I gave them information And they decided that I didn't know what I was doing because I was a female. I am very, very unique in the cannabis industry. I'm a female grower and I'm a female strain chaser. There's like maybe 5 or 6 of us worldwide. It's all dominated by men. And so they decided that because they didn't like my answers, that I didn't know what I was doing. And they hired a CEO to replace me. He was from Yale. He was a Yale graduate. I do not have a college degree in business management. I've just learned everything from the School of Hard Knocks. So I was still, well, I was still hired by them. I began giving them, you know, they were stumbling bad. And so I was saying, you need to do this, you need to do that. You know, I was giving them real information. And the guy wouldn't listen to me. They hired a CEO from Yale, and I tried and tried and tried to get this guy to listen. They believed that they knew more than I did. And the guy got an extractor that burnt all the flour, and they literally destroyed a $20 million company. And I'm trying to tell them how to pull it out, and I can't. I can't do anything for them because they won't listen to me. They're listening to a Yale guy. And when it was all said and done, I reached out to another company and let them know about what was available. And we were able to pull out all those bad flour and rework the formula and actually make them a profit. This is after they told me I didn't know what I was doing. This is after they soft replaced me with somebody else. This is after they wasted $20 million on stuff that they didn't need to buy, and they nearly destroyed everything. They were still able to walk out of it with a profit. That was my biggest mistake, is getting hired by a group of guys that I knew did not understand cannabis, and I knew they did not understand cultivation of cannabis. So I tell that story. I've told that story to potential hires, and it's like, even though the entire place was against me, I knew exactly what I was doing. I knew what they were doing wrong. And when they finally crashed it and came to me and said, Park, we kind of screwed up. Can you still help us? I was able to still pull their fat out of the fire. So that's a strong story, but it's difficult because I watched a $20 million company go down and I could do nothing about it. I didn't quit my job. I didn't quit them, even though they quit me, because I realized they didn't know they needed me. And then they finally figured it out, and they ended up finishing getting their money out. They could have, they should have made $100 million or more, and they broke even. They were thrilled they broke even, because all the information they had gotten from the other guy was leading them right down the path to crash. So that question is really important to you as a business, because if they can't answer that question, that means when they crash a company, it's not an if, it's a when they crash a company, they won't do self introspection to figure out how they screwed up, so they never do it again. Don't hire that person. What's something that people usually misunderstand about you? That's a really valuable question, because every one of us has something that we're misunderstood about. And that's not usually a question that they get in an interview. But the thing is that kind of question gives you an opportunity to get to know somebody past the mask that they're wearing sitting in front of you. This is where a lot of times your hire will reveal something about them that you can't see all the time. I got this question once in a hire, and I told him, I said, I have a disability that you can't see. Like, what? I'm dyslexic. I'm severely dyslexic. And I have a way to hide that disability from my employer for a very long time. And at some point I have to confess because it will show up. So the fact that you're asking me about that right now takes a lot of pressure off of me. This is what I do. This is how I work around it, and it will not affect business. You'll notice it, but I have a workaround solution already done. being honest about that got me the job. So it's, you're just never, I've had all kinds of answers to this. What is something that people usually misunderstand about you? I had a guy say, I wear pink fingernail polish on my little finger. And I was like, what in the world? I said, you wear pink fingernail polish on your little finger. I don't understand. He goes, yeah, my baby sister died when she was 6 months old. So to remember her, I paint pink fingernail polish on my little finger. And I've had a lot of, you know, employees have given me a lot of grief about it. And I usually don't tell anybody, but people misunderstand. They think I'm gay because of the little pink fingernail. It's not. It's from my baby sister. It's like, you could have gutted me right there on the spot. I was like, okay, now hire that guy. Okay. He cares. He cares so much about somebody that in his life that he has a visual reminder that he wears on his body. That's an extreme level of care. Even if it is your baby sister, because if he has that kind of care about his baby sister, he's going to have a lot of care about everything else they do. So one of the questions you might want to ask is, who is your best boss and who is your worst boss and why? Every boss has a different style of leadership. I am a type A personality boss. I'm abrasive. I'm loud. I'm extremely proud of my team. I'm gregarious. I'm generous with my team. But I'm also an asshole. If you want sugar-coated words, you go talk to Willy Wonka, because I'm not going to give them to you. I'm going to give you the raw grit. You either deal with it and understand I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm giving you the raw, unfiltered truth with no sugar, no polish, no nothing, because I want you to see it so you can fix it. I want you to see it. I want you to hear it. I want you to know it so that you can figure out a plan to change it. Unfortunately, in this world, when you treat employees like that, oh, you don't like me. No, I'm telling you the truth because you need to know so you can go out there and kick butt and fix it. I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm trying to explain to you where you can do better so that you can be the powerhouse that both of us want you to be. And once you start explaining to people, look, I'm abrasive. That's just me. It doesn't mean I don't like you. It means I'm pushing you hard because I want you to be the best you can be. And if you don't know what I need or what you need, you can't solve the problem. So I've had people tell me you were the best boss I ever had. And I've had people tell me, I wish you'd go roast yourself in hell. You were the meanest, nastiest boss I ever had. And I have to admit, there's a part of me that warms the cockles of my heart when they say that, because you can't keep up, go away. So I'm not a nice, sweet, kind boss. Okay. But the people that I work with, we're driven. Everybody in my group is usually pretty hard driven. And so I want that same kind of person. So I'm like, if you're a smart ass in the interview, I'll generally hire you, because you're going to get along with the rest of my crew. We're all smart asses. So it's just the leadership. So what they tell you about what their best boss was, what their worst boss is, what they're actually telling you without them knowing it, is they're telling you how they respond. And if they say, oh, my best boss was a lady, she was really great. At 10 o'clock every day, we would all, the whole company would stop and we'd all have tea and we talk about our issues for about 20 minutes. Then we go back to work. I'm like, you are going to die in my company, buddy. I am not the boss for you. I would be, if everybody took 20 minutes off in the middle of the day, what the heck are you doing? Get back to work, Pop-Tarts. I am not going to be the right boss for that person. What's your best boss? If somebody says, yeah, I had a really aggressive boss and they paid very well and They always complimented us. They always put us in a great frame of mind, even though they pushed us really, really bad. If they say something like that, okay, that's my employee. Come here. I'm your boss because that's me. You're looking for an answer that describes your style of leadership. And if it's not, if it's the exact opposite of way you lead, if you lead, you can't hire that guy. You can't hire that girl because they're going to be miserable. So the answer that you're looking for that's going to be the best one for your company is an answer that fits how you are as a boss or how the person is that they're going to be reporting to. So if I am interviewing a person for staff and they're not going to be coming to me, I'm not their direct uplink. I'm going to have, if I'm going to hire a person and they're going to be reporting to my CEO, I already know what my CEO's leadership style is. So if this guy answers something or this girl answers something that's not the same way my leader is, I can't hire him because they won't get along. They'll end up quitting. So don't be scared to ask for details on this question. Because this question is for you. It's not for this interviewee. This question is for you to determine whether or not this person is going to be good with the way you lead. Because if he's not good with your style or leadership, he's never going to be happy. You're going to make him miserable. I've done this before, folks. All these questions, I've done the exact same thing I'm telling you not to do. I've done it, and it's been disastrous. Disastrous. I had an employee embezzle $100,000+ from me and also went on to make over $100,000 in orders because she hated me. She absolutely hated me. She left a note in her desk after she'd done all this dirty and basically told me that how aggressive I was just put a knife in my soul. It's like, I had no idea you were such a pansy. But she just hated me, and that's the way she got back. So you have to be careful. You can see somebody, you can like their resume, you can like their personality, but if they tell you that they work the best with a nice, sweet, kind boss and you're absolute hell on wheels, you're not going to get along. You're not going to get along. I talked about earlier about doing physical activity to get to know the person. One of my best things that ever happened to me in the physical activity thing is the guy says, how do you feel about stock cars? I love stock cars. I love the smell of gasoline in the morning. He says, how about we go out and race stock cars? And I'm like, oh, baby, let's go. Because I love motors. I love fast cars. You know, fast cars are the beat of my heart. And it was the best interview because we both liked really intense speed. And we had a lot, we identified really well. It was a great, 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 great hire because you want them to fit you, that you want them to be comfortable with your style, your personality, and that's what that question tells you. Another sip of coffee. Happy people want their friends to be happy. Happy people want others to share in their happiness. Happy employees will be a recruiter for you. Happy people will bring their friends to come to work for you. So one of the questions you ask is, will people that you work with in the past, do you have people that would follow you, that like to work with you, that want to follow you to a new company? That's kind of a tricky, hidden, kind of sneaky question because you're asking, did you get along with your other former workers, did you get along with them to the point that they like you and trust you well enough that they'd quit their job and come to work for you? If they say yes, and I've had them say yes, and they say, I have got somebody in this and this and this and this and this field. It's like, oh, baby, that's a great employee because They know how to work together. They've fostered a good working relationship with others. So I just think of everybody in my company, everybody in my project as a recruiter. The people that end up sticking with you long time tend to bring in happy, other happy people, because they don't want to work with jerks. They want to have other good people working with them. So they'll refer, they'll say, hey, look, I've got this person who's really great that I worked with at this company, and I would love it if you consider hiring them. And that's the person that gets me. They get the company, they get the goals, they get it. And they know that the person that they're referring to is somebody that they think is going to get it as well. And there's this thing that is never spoken, but is absolutely understood. There's a responsibility for sticking out your neck for somebody else. I let my employees know, look, I everybody in my company is a recruiter for the company. But I also need you to know, if you stick your neck out for somebody, it reflects against you. So if you stick your neck out for somebody and they turn into a thief or a problem child or any kind of negative thing, it reflects on you. And I will not hire somebody else you refer to me again if this first referral turns out to be a jerk bait. So just make it sure. Make sure they know that anybody you bring in, you're responsible for. The fastest way I've grown companies is I expand from within. If I'm going to hire a new position, I put it out to all the employees. Hey, we're going to hire a new controller. If you know anybody that's done a controller and you like them and you like working with them, please come talk to me about it. And then I kind of give a little kind of interview with them about that person before I actually get that person in here. You know, I'm going to hire a new janitor for the building. If you have somebody that you think is responsible, please let me know. Same thing. It doesn't matter from the lowest position to a high position. It doesn't matter. But I love hiring from within, because it's a faster way to build culture of your program the fastest way. I said a double negative. Now, I believe when I sit with a bunch of CEOs and we're talking about what we're doing, I talk about this one subject, and most of the time I get terrible looks. They look at me like I'm crazy, but I'm not crazy. I'm crazy like a fox, because I have global networks. I have people in every single major city in the United States. I've got a roll book, a Rolodex. God, for those of you that are young, you're not going to know what the heck a Rolodex is. But I have a Rolodex that has almost 10,000 names in it from contacts. Most, probably 2,000 of those people I could call right now and they would immediately recognize me. About 2,000 or 3,000 of those I haven't talked to in years, but I could say a couple of things and they would know who I am. So the reason why I have this massive, massive, massive list is because I do one thing. I ask this one question. I ask, how do you decide what do you want to do next in life? Have you decided what you want to do after you're done with this phase? And a lot of times, the answers are something that has to do with your industry or has nothing to do with your industry. And I found that when you get somebody to the top of their level inside of your company, there's no room for growth, okay? And they're at the top of their scale, they can't go any farther, they're leading that area, okay? They're going to be good for a while, but people that are working at a high caliber, they're not going to be okay for them to just like eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every single day. They want a challenge. That's why they are where they are, is because they've accepted major challenges and they love it. So I always ask, when you leave this company, What do you want to do? Or what is your dream job? What do you want to do next in life? And the answers have been amazing. And I plan on 5 years. In 5 years, whatever that person says is their end goal, I start working away for them to be able to achieve that. And I do it in a way that I maintain all of the professional contacts and links with that person. I've had people say, I want to be a dog trainer. I'm going to retire and do this. I want to have my own company doing an extraction. I want to make makeup, something that is kind of like what we're doing, but a whole different venture. And so what I do is I fix it so that they can have that. I say, hey, look, okay, so let's work on a project, a plan for you to actually get that. And they're like, what? Let's work on that project because you are now at the top of your game for my company. There's nothing I can do to promote you. So I know at some point you're going to get bored with me and you're going to go take another job. I'd rather that I work with you to help you on the next path so we can maintain business contacts and we can work together, work better and wider together. It's that knowledge that they are going to leave. Once you get them to the top of their point, their top of their stack, they won't stay, folks. They need the challenge. So you work with them to get them into the next company or to get them their own company that you back or work with in some way. I've done this for 40 years. I'm 60 years old. I started business when I was 16. I've helped people when I was doing outlaw work. I've helped people get their next thing. That ended so well. I brought all those same ways of behavior of getting somebody their next job into the corporate world when I became legal. And it has been amazing because I don't have any top level C-letter, C-suite letter people that have left me unless they, stole from the company or do some stupid bad stuff. I always keep that door open and it has come back to serve me over and over and over because a lot of times when people get to the top of their list and the top, they can't go any higher. When they finally leave, it's not always nice. They don't leave on good terms because they're frustrated. So if you set them up for success after they leave you, they'll never, ever, ever forget you. And oftentimes I've had some of the biggest deals, some of the biggest clients I've ever had has come from people that I've helped transition into their next position, come from them. And it's such a positive thing to do because you're showing that you give a damn about your employees. You don't want to, okay, when we're done with you, we kick you out. No, you want to show that you give a rat's patootie about your people. And by setting them up for success when they leave, that esprit de corps, that confirmation that you're important to me, that causes people to stay super loyal to you for literally for the rest of your working career. I've got people right now that haven't worked for me in 15 years. And I guarantee you, I can pick up the phone and I go, hey, Mark, do you want to come work for me? Do you want to come work with me? They will drop what they're doing, come work for me. Because as abrasive as I am, or I can be as a boss, I make sure that my employees are taken care of to the gnat's patootie. I make sure that whatever their next step is going to be a good step and they know it. Because I actually care. I actually give a damn. My employees are they're everything. Without them, I can't make my business run. It's not me, it's them. We are a team. And I know that when one of the team members gets to the point where there's nothing they can go further, the way for them to go further is for us to help them get into the next position that ultimately, a lot of times what happens is a symbiotic relationship. One of the guys I needed, one of the things I needed was lavender. Lavender was a really, really the type of lavender flower I needed for this type of cosmetic I was making was really, really hard to get. And this one of my CFO, he was saying, look, I want to eventually do ex plant extractions and do make tinctures of medicine. Well, that's exactly what this was. And so I said, well, how about when you leave here, you think of growing lavender and working, having your own farm and have a lavender farm. And he's like, are you serious? I go, yeah. Yeah, in fact, if you will work together on this, and if you find the property, I'll buy the property and I'll be the bank for you. So that way, I know during the winter things are a little difficult, so we can flex with paying us back, or we can flex with, instead of paying me every month when the lavender crop comes in, you pay me a certain crop of the lavender crop. It was one of the best deals ever. That company is still buying from that employee that grows lavender. They're still doing it. So it was a long-term, very, very close symbiotic relationship, because the company needed a product they had a hard time getting. And one of the guys that was at the top of the game, he was ready to leave. He was already looking for jobs when we said, hey, what about this? And he immediately reversed what he was doing and like, oh no, this is exactly what I want to do. I want to be a farmer. Okay. I want to relax in the sun. I want to grow plants. I want to do soft water extraction of tinctures on plants. That's exactly what I want to do. So that question you need to really pay attention to, because it's going to determine what options are going to be available for you with that employee when they are done with their time of service with you. Time to take another sip of coffee. The next question I ask is, what do you do for fun? What do you do for fun? The first year that you are building your company is going to be the most difficult, most exciting, most frustrating thing you're ever going to do. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be a lot of fun, but it's going to be extremely stressful. So you want to ask every employee, what do you do for fun? And you are going to need to build company morale. You are going to need to build a company team. So you're asking, what do you do for fun? Is because you're going to get a full different amount of answers for this question. And this question, you document this question, because what do you like to do for fun? I like to build trains. I like to fly jets. I like to scuba dive. So what this answer does is it tells you, what's their relaxation point? So you're going to do a company morale thing, and the person says, I like to fly jets. That's a really difficult one. We're going to have a company day where we're going to go fly helicopters over the Grand Canyon. The guy that likes to fly jets, well, it's not a jet, but you're in the air. So the people that like flying or doing that kind of stuff, if you've got a lot of people that say do that, that's going to be a great relaxation, fun thing for the group. What do I like to do for fun? I like to hike. Okay. So if you have a lot of people that say hiking, then you set up you're going to hike over to whatever mountain or whatever. One of the companies I had, almost every single employee, God love Texas, these people, they answered the same exact way. They like to fish. Almost every single person, oh, I like fishing. I like going fishing in the river, because we were right by the some river, I can't remember. And they like trout fishing. So we did company morale builders. We took everybody out fishing. I didn't know how to fly fish until I went work and I started working for this company. These people taught me how to fly fish. And it, you know what? Fly fishing is a blast. I was like, how the heck do you catch a fish? Flip, flip, flip with the. It was a blast. So I write down, what do you want to do for fun? And I catalog that information as I get more and more employees. And you'll see some areas are going to have more people that like to do one thing or the other. And then you build your company morale boosters around those things. You get a better bang for your buck when you spend on your morale building things, because you're actually doing things that the people like, or a certain percentage of the people like. I had guys, the guys that do swimming answers and that kind of stuff. I did whitewater rafting trips, and that went over amazingly well. Swimmers, divers, all that, whitewater rafting. It was wonderful. Great, great thing. It's a great way to build morale if you know what they actually like. And so you build a good team because they're working together, but they have a lot of fun as a group. And it caused the group to gel better, is because on those times off, it was just so much fun. So much fun. I want to know, what do they know about the company that they're interviewing? What do you like about XYZ? What do you like about, say, you have a hotel company? What do you like about building hotels? What do you like about working in hotels? What you're asking is not so much what do you like? You're asking them, what do you understand? What do you understand about this type of a company? And you want to hire people that have a good understanding of what you're about to do. I'm going to say, with the hemp, when I do the hemp reef builds to fix the reef, what do you like about the reefs? Do you like it? Do you know much about the reefs? What do you like about reefs? And that answer is going to tell me a lot about their knowledge. It's going to tell you two secret answers too. The first secret that they're going to tell you is it allows you to understand what people outside of this industry think about what you're doing. And it's going to allow you to understand what people outside of your industry appreciate about this specific project that you're going to do. The other thing it tells you, it gives you a glimpse into how you are different or better than other things in the same area or the same marketplace. Sometimes I ask this, sometimes I skip it over. I ask, if you could change one thing about a company in this industry, what would it be? And builders, you want people that are builders. And a builder is somebody that can immediately point out things in the future that they can sort out and they can figure out the answers for. Like I said, there's three different types of employees. A builder, they're going to immediately point out things that they could fix personally, and they could take on that task. They want to seem serious and ready to put in the work. A builder employee is going to immediately have an answer that's that direction. So there's creatives. I've had creative people look at my business and say, hey, your website needs to be better. Your phone service needs to be better. I'm looking for somebody who's going to be working in my business, in my industry, but they have a creative bent that is embedded in another area that's not a part of my company, that I can immediately have them take over that part of my culture of the business. You're going to find little gems in that question. I didn't have somebody that was embedded in that area to fix that area. So I ended up finding, pure gold in that question. You want people that are going to come to work with you that can identify what's wrong or little issues that they could fix. And they see it immediately and they go, this is what I could do, and this is how you fix it. That's somebody you want to hire. That's a good question. Now, a lot of times I ask, depending on, by the, we get to the end of the interview, and if I think, oh yeah, I think this person, yeah, this is a working person. This is somebody I'm thinking, yeah, I'm gonna hire that person. Then I ask the terrible question. What questions do you have for me? You see, an interview isn't a one-way street, and you want to give 10 minutes, 5 minutes at the end of your interview to be able to answer any questions they have in the job. This is a time in the interview that if you like this person, you want to have them come work for you. This is a time in the interview where you sell your company or not. But it's also It's also often that brand new people that are running businesses, they forget that the employee is interviewing them as much as you are interviewing them. When you're talking to three-letter suite applicants, they don't have to come work for you. They're bad to the bone. And if they're available to do an interview, they're not just going to look at just you. They have other options. You are just one of them. So you have to remember that they are interviewing you as much as you are interviewing them. So you need to give them an opportunity to interview you. And that's what I do at the very end. If I'm thinking, yes, I really want to hire this person, the question I ask, the last question I ask is, do you have any questions for me? If I figure out in the middle of the interview, like, oh, heck no, this guy is not for me. I don't want to work for him. No, I don't want him to work for me. No, I never ask this question. I end the interview. But if I'm seriously considering that, yeah, I think I want to hire this person, I ask the last question, what questions do you have for me? If they don't have at least one or two questions on the tip of their tongue, they are also telling you that they don't have the ability to forward think, and they may not be as organized or on point as you hope they do. But you're hoping that their questions kind of clarify to you what their deal is going to be that they're going to want to make with you. Often that last question kind of tells you what their focus is. And for it's that's either the icing on the cake or the drop the cake on the floor moment. And so I've had employees, potential employees, ask really stupid questions. And it's like, I'm not sure if I want to hire you. I've had employees ask some amazing questions that caused me to see problems in my company that I didn't know were there. So it's if you're serious about hiring that person, that's literally the last question I ask. So folks, that's it. That's how I do it. That's the real deal. No bars holding back. This is interesting. Brian, you came in at the exact moment. Brian, how many people have you hired?
In the back?
What?
Can you hear me? Or no, I'm traveling.
Yeah, I can
Can you hear
hear
me?
you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Probably 15.
Oh my gosh, Brian, I thought with your position you'd hired quite a few. So I was going to ask you, what's your favorite question for an interview to ask an potential employee?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned, what can be done to change the industry. I think that's a very profound question because it's all inclusive of not just one specific area, but it's a revolutionary question, if that makes any sense.
Yep, thank you. So folks, I love Brian. I was just gonna pick on him because I think the world of him. Does anybody have any questions for me about any of this process? Well, with no questions, I'm gonna end this audio. I appreciate you coming and spending your time with me. I know it's valuable time. My goal in all of these audios is to get you the most information that I can possibly get to you and help you be comfortable and confident in the role that you're about to play as a humanitarian. Folks, we are the people the world is waiting for. You just may not realize it yet. The reason why I give you these interviews, the reason why I give you these conversations, all these tapes, is because nobody has ever told you that you can do this. You've been trained by the media to tell yourself, I can't, I can't, I can't. Running a global foundation, running a national foundation, running a statewide foundation is not difficult. The most difficult thing about this is to find the people to help you do this. And you've got that. Bless you, humanitarians. Dream big. The world is waiting for you. Dream big. You have a lot to do. Amen.